One of the biggest lies in college football has to be that nothing ever happens in June in the sport. Because I'm sitting here right now recording this show, and I'm looking at what all I'm going to talk about. And guys, it's June 23rd, but yet so much has happened in the sport, and stuff continues to churn behind the scenes, and we just got to dive right in. I'm looking at the college football playoff and the formats that are being discussed. People are taking shots at the SEC. Wisconsin files a lawsuit against a former player who's now on the roster at Miami. It's madness. There's so much going on in June, and it's exactly why you have shows like this to break it all down year-round. Welcome into the Air Raid with Parker Kelly on ESPN 102.5, 106.3, the game across the game, Nashville Sports Network. If you haven't already, which I'm kind of surprised you found the show if you haven't subscribed, but if you have not subscribed, please subscribe to the Game Nashville Sports Network. Well, you will get each and every episode of the Air Raid with Parker Kelly. You will never miss a single episode, and you'll also get all of the lovely podcasts that me and my coworkers are doing here at 102.5 The Game. And also, please hit me up on the socials. Please follow me on the socials at Parker_Kelly10. I would greatly appreciate it. I'm diving right in because we got to get talking about what's going on in this quote-unquote off-season of ours, because it really doesn't feel like an off-season, and it shouldn't, because college football is year-round. Okay, Wisconsin, they're filing a lawsuit against Miami. This is a landmark moment in college athletics. If you happen to read Ross Dellinger's article over at yahoosports.com, he did a phenomenal job outlining everything that has gone on with this wild situation. I'm basically going to break this down in simple terms for you, because there's a lot of legalese that I don't really care to get into, but I'm going to get into the meat of the situation and explain what's going on. Okay, so basically this is the first university to file a suit against another university for the poaching of a college football player, a college football player that is currently under a contract. This is the first time that we've ever seen that. The University of Wisconsin and its NIL collective have filed a complaint in a state circuit on Friday of last week, against the University of Miami over tortious interference, which is basically interfering with another player who is under a binding revenue share contract. This player happens to be Xavier Lucas, and the contract is with the University of Wisconsin. Now, Wisconsin is seeking financial damages and a declaratory judgment deeming Miami's actions as wrongful. And while they are seeking this, they also have full support from the Big Ten Conference, who came out with a statement, I believe it was last Friday, backing Wisconsin and their actions of filing suit against Miami. Okay, a simple timeline of what happened. Xavier Lucas was a standout freshman corner for Wisconsin last season. He committed to Wisconsin, had a standout season, informed the coaching staff that he would like to enter the portal when the first portal window opened up. This would have been around mid-December or so. He informed the coaching staff that he would like to enter the portal. And usually when a player requests or informs the coaching staff that they would like to enter the portal, usually the coaches or whoever is in charge of it enters that player's name into the portal, and from that point on, it basically turns into free agency, and any school can come after that player. Well, Xavier Lucas informed the coaching staff at Wisconsin that he would like to enter the portal. Here's the problem with Lucas's request. Wisconsin and Lucas had agreed to a 2-year rev share agreement that was set to begin on July 1st when schools can legally start paying the athletes, you know, because the House settlement has now been passed. But because Lucas had agreed to this contract, and Wisconsin also agreed, this was a mutual agreement, because of this, Wisconsin coaching staff, they didn't enter Lucas's name into the portal. Seems fair, right? It gets even more interesting. To kind of skirt the NCAA rules, Lucas proceeded to withdraw from classes at Wisconsin and enroll academically at Miami in January. There's no NCAA rule that prohibits this kind of activity, this type of action that Lucas took. But the NCAA does require athletes who enter the portal, or once they're officially in the portal, they're allowed to communicate with another school. But because Lucas, he never really entered the portal. He withdrew from classes at Wisconsin, enrolled at Miami, and then from that point joined the football team. And I looked on Miami's roster, and sure enough, Xavier Lucas is listed on the roster for 2025. So this was a loophole. It was very sly by Xavier Lucas. I'm not condoning the action. It was very sly, though. So Lucas also, he enrolled for the fall 2025 semester at Miami, but was reclassified to spring 2025. So he switched teams without entering the portal. First time we've ever really seen this happen since the transfer portal was introduced. So I also want to break down this rev share agreement that Wisconsin Lucas agreed to. So there's a Big Ten issued template form for these types of agreements. And basically this form, it binds Lucas and all other players who sign to whatever school they sign with. It grants that school a player's non-exclusive rights to use and market their name, image, and likeness, and that cannot be used by any other school. And that's pretty self-explanatory. That's probably pretty obvious as well. So when Lucas signed this agreement with the NIL agreement with the collective in Madison to compensate him until the university could legally, at least within terms of the House settlement, they were going to give him a pretty substantial amount of money. In fact, I think he was going to be one of the highest paid Badgers on the team. Here's another chapter of this whole story. Lucas, at some point after Wisconsin's season ended in 2024, he went back home, and Lucas is from Florida. So I guess at some point while he was back home, he learned that his father had suffered from a serious life-threatening illness. So I believe that this was part of the reason why he told the coaching staff that he wanted to enter the portal. However, I'm not entirely sure. Wisconsin and the coaches claim that Lucas provided inconsistent information. And then this suit that has also been filed also claims that Lucas was approached by Miami coaches and recognizable alumni from Miami, and Lucas was offered a compensation commitment for him to leave Wisconsin. So this story, the more you read it, the more interesting it becomes. And this is just one big giant mess, but I really have three thoughts, three takeaways, if you will, after kind of reading through, combing through the details. This type of stuff is exactly what the House settlement is going to attempt to crack down on. The fact that Lucas was approached by Miami coaches, alumni of the university, and offered a financial compensation to leave a school, that's tampering. That's poaching. something that should not happen in college athletics. That's something that the House settlement is going to try and crack down on. And again, the reason Lucas wanted to enter the portal very well could have been his dad. Like, that's a reasonable idea to want to enter the portal. But that I'm just sharing what I learned from Ross Dellinger's report. I was also thinking, if this type of loophole exists, what's really the point of the transfer portal? Because the way it stands right now with the two windows and teams wanting one window, and I'm going to get to that a little bit later on in the show, what's the point of entering your name in the transfer portal, finally being able to talk with coaches, if this type of loophole exists? So, of course, that has to be figured out as well. And the final thing, Wisconsin, since they have filed this suit against Miami, it tells me that they must have a crystal clear conscience if they are filing a suit against Miami for tampering. And that tells me that if they're filing this suit, that they believe that they are 100% innocent of not tampering as well, at least in recent years. So that's kind of three thoughts that I had after reading this story from Ross Dellinger. But again, Lucas is currently listed on the roster at Miami. I'm interested to see how this story plays out, but it's really one giant mess, but I'm really excited to see how it plays out. All right. The SEC has been catching a lot of heat lately for reasons we've talked about on the show before. It is very well documented that the SEC, as it stands currently, plays an 8-game conference schedule, meaning they play 8 games against SEC opponents. So Brett Bielema, who is the head coach at Illinois, was also a former head coach at Arkansas, and before that, a head coach at Wisconsin. So he's been through the Big Ten. He's had a little experience in the SEC as well. Brett Bielema, if there's one thing that you need to know about him, is he's not afraid to speak his mind. So he's just the latest person to go after the SEC for not playing 9 regular season conference games. And now that this, you know, House settlement has been approved and that the news has officially been broken, although most of us knew that it was coming, it was just only a matter of when it was going to be announced. The college football playoff and the SEC playing 9 conference games, that seems to be really the hot topic in college football right now. So the set date for having the future college football playoff format decided is December 1st. And that's also around the time the SEC needs to have their minds made up of, okay, are we going to move to 9 conference games or are we going to stay at 8? Well, on Tuesday, Brett Bielema spoke at an event in Chicago. This was Tuesday of last week. And he says that Big Ten coaches voted unanimously to stay at 9 league games and maybe have an SEC challenge, meaning they would play 1 game against the SEC every year. I personally would love that. And this is the quote that really stuck out to me from Bielema. He says, "I get it, but like, I think until you get to 9 for everybody, I don't think it could work." He's talking about, of course, I believe he's referring to the 5+11 college football playoff format, which would add up to 16 teams. He says that he doesn't believe it would work unless the SEC was going to move to 9 conference games. Now, I've been very clear on my stance on this. I would love to see the SEC play 9 conference games because I think that it is more entertaining games each week, because the SEC is a very deep league. Very deep league, you know, 1 through 16. It's very competitive. I believe the more conference games we would get, the more entertaining it would be for the fans. So I would love to see the SEC play 9 conference games. However, as I've also said, I don't think that is going to happen, at least for right now, because if the goal right now is to get as many teams in the playoff field as possible, what's the SEC's incentive for making their schedule harder than it already is? And you would make it harder by adding a 9th league game. We saw examples from SMU and from Indiana, teams that, and this is no slight to Indiana or SMU, that's not what I'm making this out to be, just saying they had far easier schedules than a lot of SEC teams last season. But SMU and Indiana, they won their games that were in front of them, or at least enough to be considered to get into the field of 12 for the college football playoff. So the SEC is looking at this and are like, okay, the playoff committee clearly rewards the how many games you win, and, you know, Indiana had a very light schedule, but they won the games that were in front of them, got to 11-1 in the regular season. That earned them an at-large bid in the playoffs. So the SEC is sitting back and looking and thinking, why do I need to make my schedules harder for my teams if I can just win as many games as possible and stack my schedule with cupcakes and get into the playoff? That's the exact mindset. So, I mean, there's evidence of this happening in the past. What's the incentive for the SEC, at least for right now, to add on a 9th league game? Right now, there is none. Now, if the playoff were to change and the committee kind of tweaked how they view strength of schedule, strength of record, they laid out more clear guidelines regarding those two parameters, I think that that is when we would get a 9-game, 9-league schedule, or a 9-league game schedule. And also, too, if the SEC were guaranteed automatic bids, I think that that would also help the SEC go to 9. But everything is still up in limbo right now. But I do want to offer a quick thought. I just don't understand, like, why everybody feels the need to attack the SEC for not playing 9 league games. Because I want to pose this question. Let's take a team like Nebraska out of the Big Ten. And let's say I went up to Nebraska and I said, hey, would you willingly switch your schedule and you take on Florida's schedule, or you take on Oklahoma's schedule, and then you give one of those two teams your schedule? I'm looking around the room and nobody's talking. That's because they don't want that. Everybody knows that Florida and Oklahoma arguably have the two hardest schedules in the country coming up in 2025. Now, Nebraska, schedule's not as hard. So I'm just saying, like, I just don't understand why everybody is so obsessed with the SEC moving to 9 conference games. I'd like to see it happen, but as of right now, they don't have any incentive to do it. That's all I'm trying to say. Now, as far as the future of the playoff is concerned, it's been very clear that the SEC and the Big Ten talked about this on the show. They take control over what the playoff format will look like starting in 2026 and beyond. The two big boys of college football, the two leagues, you know, the power conferences. But did we ever stop to think about what would happen if the SEC and the Big Ten didn't agree? Because I'm here to tell you right now that right now they're not necessarily seeing eye to eye. It was reported originally, if you remember, that the two conferences were in favor of the auto bids each, the 4-4-2-2-1-1 model, but not as of recently. So the Big Ten still wants the auto bid. So they'd still want the 4-4-2-2-1-1 model, or whatever it would be for 16. But ever since the SEC spring meetings in Destin, Florida, it sounds like the SEC has been kind of pushing the idea around of a 5+11 model, which would be the five automatic bids for your five highest ranked conference champs plus 11 at large bids. And I'm going to kind of ride both sides of the fence. I'm not just going to ride it. I'm going to surf the fence here, because I side with the Big Ten on this matter, because I personally, as I've talked about, I believe it was either last show or two shows ago, if it came down to the 5+11 model and the 4-4-2-2-1-1 model of which playoff format I would want, and this is considering the fact that I never wanted expansion in the first place, but since there's no putting the toothpaste back in the tube, I personally prefer the 4-4-2-2-1-1 model. And I'm not going to really take the time to explain that, because I've explained it before. If you want to know why, you can go back and you can listen to one of my previous episodes where I talked about it. But I side with the Big Ten on this because I want the automatic bids. So the SEC and the Big Ten disagree on that. Here's something else they also disagree on: the transfer portal. The SEC preferably wants one portal window in January, while the Big Ten wants a portal window that fits more around the academic calendar. So I side with the SEC on this, because I want one portal window, and I want it in January, and I want it to open after the college football playoff, and ideally I'd like to push the college football playoff up so that it ends around New Year's, and that way we can open the transfer portal window after that. That's ideally what I want. So there's clearly a disagreement on this, and at some point, if these two conferences are going to want to be in lockstep, they're going to have to figure this stuff out. And I also saw a report from Heather Dinnage. You know, she was at SEC spring meetings in Destin. Greg Sankey has also said that the 12-team playoff is still an option going forward, potentially in 2026 and beyond. So there's a chance that the playoff doesn't even expand at all. Man, it's lots of discussions going on about the college football playoff, and then I read this report, and it may not even change at all. Much to do about nothing, I guess. I don't know. So, yeah. That's a lot of what's been going on in June in college football, but don't worry, because I have plenty of show to get to. So, this sent a lot of shockwaves throughout the college football community, and really amongst the Southeast Conference, and if I get a little bit more specific, the state of Tennessee. So Diego Pavia appeared on Bussin' with the Boys last week, and he had some strong comments on their rivalry with the state of Tennessee. I'm going to go ahead and play those for you. Just take a listen to what Diego Pavia had to say.
Vanderbilt's going to run Tennessee after this year. Like, this is going to be the new staple of, like, college football is going to happen here at Vanderbilt.
Do any of you and the boys ever, like, talk about that? Like, we got to be the state school.
Well,
we're in Nashville, Tennessee. Like, we're in the Music City. Like, we need to be the brand of Tennessee.
Everyone wants to come to Tennessee because of Nashville. So they want to come to Nashville, so Vanderbilt. And then when we have, like, the most money in NIL, like, why not come here? So, like, we literally just have to win this year and throughout the rest of the year. It'll take care of itself.
You think Vandy will have the most money in the game?
I think we'll be up there.
Yeah.
But, like, it's Nashville.
Yeah, there's a lot of big hitters around here.
Yeah.
They just need a team to believe in.
Yeah, that's all they need.
They need Diego Pavia.
So, that was Diego Pavia on Bussin' with the Boys. Some very strong comments, and I will say, Tennessee fans, we're not happy about that, but I'm going to be honest. Like, Diego Pavia is a very, very confident person, and sometimes that rubs people the wrong way. I personally, for college football, I think we need strong personalities like Diego Pavia, and everything really entertaining and fun to watch. So, and here's the great part about Diego Pavia. He really came on the scene last year, but if you remember, you know, a couple of years ago, or I can't remember exactly, 2 or 3 years ago when he was at New Mexico State and he beat Auburn, you know, that was a huge upset. So, and then last year, Diego Pavia, he beat Alabama. So Diego Pavia is a giant slayer and he's backed it up on the field. And, you know, here he is on Bustin' with the Boys talking about that Vanderbilt is going to run Tennessee after this year. I love it. I love the trash talk. I think it's great for rivalries because really this is what rivalries are all about. Rivalries are what college football, one of the pillars that the sport was founded on. So I love the trash talk. I love the banter. Now you got to go back it up. And Diego Pavia has backed it up. He beat Alabama last year, beat Auburn in the Plains when he was at New Mexico State. So he's always been an underdog type of player. And to kind of burst onto the national scene like he did last year, it's really a cool story. And, you know, the fact that he's making appearances like this on Bustin' with the Boys, I think the trash talk is great for the rivalries. Now, let's go ahead and take a look at Vanderbilt's schedule. So, Vanderbilt has a pretty loaded back half of their schedule. The first half of the schedule is not too bad. Probably their toughest game is they're going to be at South Carolina on September 13th and playing in Williams-Brice Stadium, especially if that game is at night. Not an easy place to play. They're also at Lane Stadium at Virginia Tech the week before, but I think that South Carolina game is definitely going to be a tough one. Now, going to their sixth game, that's when they're at Alabama. So it's going to be important to remember that while Vandy is at Alabama, Alabama will be coming off of a night game versus Georgia the week prior. How does that affect Alabama? I don't know. We'll have to wait and find out. Vanderbilt also has they have a bye week after Alabama. Then they're at home versus LSU. They have a home game versus Missouri. They're on the road at Texas. Home game versus Auburn. Home game versus Kentucky. And then they're at Tennessee. So Alabama, LSU, Missouri, Texas, Auburn, Tennessee. Not exactly easy games for Vanderbilt. So it's going to be a pretty rough back half of the schedule for Vanderbilt. And I listened to the whole episode of Bustin' with the Boys. Just wanted to see what Diego Pavia was saying. Now, he didn't necessarily say that Vanderbilt was going to go 12-0, but you can tell that he really believes it and he implied it. And he also made a point that Vanderbilt, if anything other than a national championship this year, would be considered a bust. So really strong words from Diego Pavia. Yeah, Vanderbilt's. I feel really comfortable saying that Vanderbilt is not going to win a national title. I feel very, very comfortable saying that. And just looking at their 2025 schedule, I just don't see a world where that happens. I just don't see a world where that happens. Now, Diego Pavia also mentioned that he was going to win the Heisman Trophy this year, and I went to FanDuel and I looked at the Heisman Trophy odds. Diego Pavia currently has plus 1,500 odds to win the Heisman Trophy. Again, that is according to FanDuel. So some really strong comments from Diego Pavia. And just got to remember that if you don't beat Tennessee this year, if you don't beat Alabama, you run the risk of getting clowned. But I believe Diego Pavia completely knows, you know, what comes with that type of territory. I believe that Diego Pavia, again, he's been an underdog his whole life. And just seeing how he kind of burst onto the national scene, I think it was a really cool story. Okay. What's the future of general managers in college football. And the reason I ask this is Cal head coach Justin Wilcox, there came out a report last week, and it might have been a little bit before last week, but there was a report that came out that Cal head coach Justin Wilcox is going to begin reporting to newly hired general manager Ron Rivera on any and all football-related decisions. And I read the report, and I'm like, I just – this is kind of how my brain works. I was just thinking, is this the future of general managers in college football where, you know, they're kind of in charge of all, you know, football roster-related decisions? So I think that this just kind of goes to show the trend and the future of what general managers are meaning in the sport. Now, tons of schools have hired general managers because, as I've talked about, coaches nowadays have a ton more responsibility in terms of recruiting out of the portal, NIL, managing all of that, in addition to coming up with the X's and O's to win football games on the field, which is what ultimately matters. So coaches have a lot on their plates. So in order to kind of not necessarily make their job easier, because the college football head coaches don't have an easy job, but in order to kind of lighten the load a little bit so they can focus more on the X's and O's aspect of the game, which is why they were hired in the first place, general managers are being hired. And there was a new NCAA rule that passed a couple years ago where you can have as many, you know, on-the-field coaches as you want to kind of help out with the load a little bit. So I think that this is good in terms of helping coaches just be able to focus on coaching the team and roster decisions and things like that. Now, some schools like the University of Tennessee have chosen not to hire a general manager yet. Although the door hasn't been entirely shut on that front, I believe the door has been left open on Tennessee potentially hiring a general manager. But as it stands right now, there hasn't been a mention of it. And that's okay. I'm not saying there's a right or wrong when it comes to this, because if it works for Tennessee, hey, it works for Tennessee. Josh Heupel likes the way things are run in Knoxville. So does athletic director Danny White. Hey, that's completely fine by me. Other coaches, you know, if they want a general manager, that's completely their right. But I just think that this just goes to show that the future of general managers in college football is certainly something that I'm not going to say unprecedented, but it's something that hasn't been, you know, would we be talking about general managers in college football 10 years ago? You know, if we were to go back in time, would this be a topic of conversation? I don't know. But yeah, so a team that has a really good general manager, or at least a general manager that has been very active over the course of the offseason, James Blanchard at Texas Tech. And I'm continuing my series of doing a team preview each and every episode of the Air Raid leading up to the 2025 regular season. And this week's team preview will be a team that I've been very high on, a team that is my dark horse to make the college football playoff in 2025, a team that I've talked about ad nauseum, and that is Texas Tech. This is a team that has had complete unity within their athletic department, and this is a type of unity that is focused on not just making football as competitive as possible, but making all sports competitive as possible. We saw their softball team make a run to all the way to the Women's College World Series Finals. They were paying their pitcher about $1 million in NIL. So there is a commitment to making Texas Tech athletics as competitive as possible. Their basketball team making the Elite Eight this year and almost made it to the Final Four, but there's an epic comeback from Florida. So on the football side of things in Lubbock, their football facility, their weight room has undergone some renovations, and it is sick. I personally hope that Joey McGuire or James Blanchard happens to find this podcast, because I would love to go out to Lubbock to be able to see the renovations. I've never been to Lubbock. I've never really been on that side of Texas before, and I really hope that one day I get to go. I had Texas Tech ranked number 17 in my post-spring top 25. They were in contention last year for the Big 12. They went out and they had the number 2 ranked transfer portal class in the country. This is a team that offensively was very good. Defensively, however, there's a lot of things that they needed to shore up. They surrendered 35 points or more in their 5 losses last season. They were 122nd in scoring defense in 2024, allowing about just under 35 points per game. They were next to last in pass defense, allowing 308 yards per game through the air. What did Joey McGuire do? He went out and he hired former Houston defensive coordinator Sheil Wood. This is a coach that helped Houston improve from the 112th ranked total defense in 2023 to 26th last season. So a big jump for that Houston defense. This is a guy that should, on paper, really help Texas Tech's defense. They went out and they got defensive end David Bailey from Stanford, who is going to be a superstar. I know it. Had 14.5 sacks in 3 seasons at Stanford. They went out and they got defensive end Romello Height from Georgia Tech. He was a highly rated prospect in the transfer portal. They retooled the offensive line, which is what they needed to do. They went out and they got offensive tackle Howard Sampson from North Carolina, offensive tackle Will Jados of Miami of Ohio. They added some pass catchers to go along with their returning wide receivers, who were 2 and 3 in terms of receiving yards last season, and Caleb Douglas and Coy Eakin. Quentin Joyner is going to be their running back to replace Taj Brooks. They went out and they got Joyner from USC. They also return a quarterback who, if I asked you who Texas Tech's quarterback was, would you be able to name it? I'm sure there are a good amount of you who are listening to this podcast who would be able to do that, because you're diehard college football fans like me. But they return a quarterback who was very under the radar in Baron Morton. He ranked 16th last season in pass yards with 3,335, and he also ranked 16th in passing touchdowns with 27. So this is an offense that kind of had to retool some things. They were really, really good last year. And again, they went out and retooled some things, so expect the offense to be really good. Defensively, they went out and they addressed each position that they needed to address. They went out and they added some secondary. They went out and they got some pass rushers to take some pressure off of those corners and safeties, so they don't have to cover as long if the pass rush is able to get home. Let's take a look at their 2025 schedule. Now, I will say Texas Tech, they do play 3 of the top 5 teams favored to win the Big 12 Conference in Kansas State, Arizona State, and Utah. That Utah game happens to come in week 4. They are on the road in Salt Lake City. And then that October 18th game, when they're at Arizona State, that is a game that you're going to want to have circled on your calendar. Just trust me on that one, because that has significant, or could have significant, Big 12 title implications. And with a Big 12 title comes a college football playoff berth. So that is a game that you're certainly going to want to have circled on the calendar. And they're at Kansas State on November 1st. So the 3 toughest games on Texas Tech's schedule are all on the road against, again, 3 of the top 5 teams in the conference that are predicted to win the Big 12. So their over-under win total, according to FanDuel, is 8.5, and it is heavily juiced to the over. Texas Tech is tied for the second best odds to win the conference at plus 650. They're tied with Utah, Baylor, and Arizona State. in terms of making the college football playoff, according to FanDuel, it's plus 490, yes, minus 750, no. Listen, I'm going to be honest. I believe Texas Tech is going to make the college football playoff in 2025. I'm just going to go out and say it. I may go as far, this is going to be my bold take. I may go as far to say that Arizona State and Texas Tech both have a real shot of making the college football playoff. Now, obviously, after the season plays out and you go back and you listen to this recording and it doesn't happen, just make sure to delete the footage. It never happened. But as of right now, this is June, I really like Texas Tech's odds to compete for a Big 12 title. They were in contention last year, and they went out and signed the second-ranked transfer portal class in the country, only behind LSU. They were a couple points behind, and they might have been number one. So, I really like Texas Tech's odds to make the college football playoff in 2025. So, we'll just have to see how it goes. We will have to see how it goes. Real quick, I wanted to end the show on some recruiting updates, some recruiting news. So, Oklahoma has landed a four-star quarterback in Bo Bentley. They landed him over LSU. So here's the interesting thing about Bentley. Bentley committed to Oklahoma after longtime Sooner QB pledge Jaden O'Neal pulled his commitment last Thursday night. O'Neal actually committed to Florida State today. But here's the thing about Bentley. So Bentley is a true dual threat quarterback. Ben Arbuckle, who's the offensive coordinator at Oklahoma, came over from Washington State. Also brought his quarterback over with him and John Mateer. Bo Bentley has a very similar skill set to John Mateer. So that's really what attracted Oklahoma to signing a type of player like this. And because Arbuckle had his sights set on a quarterback like this, that's why Jaden O'Neal decommitted and ended up going to Florida State. Notre Dame. Notre Dame has been on a tear as of late. They currently have the number three class in the country, according to 24/7 Sports. They landed two top 100 recruits in Kari Adams, who is a defensive back. He chose Notre Dame over Michigan, Oregon, and Penn State. They also landed athlete Joey O'Brien. He chose the Irish over Oregon, Penn State, and Clemson. This is really significant news because O'Brien is from Pennsylvania and he turned down Penn State to go to Notre Dame. I think this just goes to show the belief that recruits have in Marcus Freeman. I believe that shows Marcus Freeman's ability to recruit at a high level. O'Brien, although he's listed as an athlete, is expected to play safety at the next level. Now, Oregon's another team. Oregon is a team that has had some whiffs in recruiting over the last couple of weeks. In fact, they whiffed on both of the recruits that Notre Dame signed, but they get a good consolation prize because they just landed a five-star safety in Jet Washington, chose Oregon over Alabama and USC. Talked about kind of the Oregon-USC rivalry in recruiting, so this is a big win for the Ducks. And this is even more notable because Jet Washington is actually the nephew of the late, great Kobe Bryant. So pretty big news on the recruiting front for Oregon. Washington's a safety at Bishop Gorman High School in Las Vegas, Nevada. Really prestigious high school football program over there. So yeah, Oregon has missed on some notable recruits as of late, but this is a big consolation prize. Texas A&M on an absolute heater. They have the number two class in the country as it stands right now, according to 24/7 Sports. They landed the number one athlete in the 2026 class in Brandon Arrington on Thursday. He chose Texas A&M over Oregon, so another whiff by Oregon, but works out in Texas A&M's favor. And they also landed five-star edge Tristan Givens. So Texas A&M and Notre Dame have been killing it over the last couple of days in recruiting. Yeah, that was a really jam-packed show here on the Air Raid with Parker Kelly. We're going to have another episode here for you next week. Again, just because it's June, don't let the naysayers confuse you, because just because it is June doesn't mean that there's not college football on the front. There's a lot to talk about. And also, by this point next week, we will be single-digit Saturdays away from the start of the college football season. It's coming up, folks. It's time. If you've been kind of tuned out of college football, you've been watching the NBA Finals, you've been watching the MLB, you've been watching the Men's College World Series, those are all fine sports to watch. But if you've been tuned out of college football, it's time to come back in, because there's a lot happening. There's a lot happening, and we need to prepare you for what should be an exciting 2025 season. Please remember to subscribe to The Game Nashville, where you will never miss an episode of The Air Raid with Parker Kelly. It's wherever you get your fine listing materials. And also, please follow me on the socials at Parker_Kelly10. Have another episode for you next week. Until then, take care, and I'll talk to you soon.